The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
And I'm happy to say a big hello coming to you today remotely. We are at the CPAC 2021. That stands for Conservative Political Action Committee. It's a big convention, all attended by people who believe in the conservative side of the political spectrum. And this year, for the first time ever, this conference is being held in Orlando at the Hyatt Regency. And everyone in the conservative side of things will be here that can be here. We are looking at people from President Trump on downward. Senators, state representatives, congressmen, they are going to be here. And again, many other people involved in different walks of life, but share the common bond of conservative thought. And that's what this conference is all about. And we at The Shepherd are privileged to have a space on Broadcast Row here. And we're going to be bringing you a lot of different type of interviews over the next several days. Today, Thursday, is the first day of the CPAC. It actually kicks off tonight. And I'm going to have, a plethora of people that will be on the program. Coming up on this show today is Dan Celia. He'll be here in a moment. Also, State Representative Anthony Sabatini from Lake County will be on the program later on as well. But first of all, a familiar voice to all of us on The Shepherd. Dan Celia is on every day, Monday through Friday, on all Shepherd stations, and he's going to be here right now. Here with my friend Dan Celia. Boy, what a great opportunity to get to have you back on the program as soon as it has been.
Yeah, really. I feel like we were just together not long ago.
I know. And that was up in the quiet confines
of
our nice Shepherd studio. And here we are on the floor in Broadcast Row. And there it is right there, the banging going on in the background. Because there's still a lot of setup. This thing really takes off and starts tonight. But even all day long today, there's a great buzz happening.
Wait till tomorrow. You're going to be here tomorrow, Mike?
Oh, I'll be here throughout the entire time.
Yeah, wait until tomorrow. It'll be crazy. Yeah.
You know, this whole thing, Dan, of CPAC coming back, and I know that I get to listen to you every day, and even though we're not together every day, because you're on our station, as you are, I feel that I get to stay in touch with what's going on in your life and your thoughts and the way that you have expressed even disappointment in the turnout of what happened in this election cycle. Could that have been more crazy? Could that have been more convoluted than what it turned out being?
No, I don't think it could be, and I pray that it never is again. You know, in our lifetime anyway. I mean, I was trying the day after the election to remind people. And, you know, I'll tell you a story. I got somebody that called me. No, did she call me or email? I think she called in. I don't remember. No, it was an email. And she emailed me and said, I heard you say that something alluding to Biden being inaugurated. It was like the week before the inauguration. And I said something on the air, and I said, look, I'm taking my cues from President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the one who's alluded to it, not me, and that's who I'm taking my cues from. And I said, you know, here's the problem, though, that we have in America. As Christians, why do we find it so hard to believe that God's plan was different than ours?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but I prayed for, I understand what you prayed for. I probably prayed for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But God's plans are different. And we need to be encouraged that we're going to go to glory someday and say, oh, now I get it.
Right.
You know, and be encouraged by that, and be encouraged that it doesn't mean we pray less. doesn't mean that, well, I'm not going to pray. God's going to do what God's going to do. No, that does not what it means. That's not what it means. Mm-hmm. We are called to be praying for this. But why are we having so much trouble accepting the fact that it didn't go the way we've been praying? I've been praying for this for 6 months, and it, you know, how did this happen? It happened because it wasn't God's plan. And I don't know what his plan was. I wish I knew. But it, maybe it was to expose. Mm-hmm. Maybe God's had enough of all this, and he's going to expose the corruption. Maybe it is going to be the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. And he's not only going to expose it, but he ain't going to fix it. You know, I mean, we don't know. We don't know. So we need to be encouraged. We need to go on and be encouraged with what we do know, right, what we can wrap our arms around.
Right.
And that's what we kind of take our cues from, and we move on. So I was much more discouraged about the callers and the people that said, oh, you know, we can't give up. Nobody's giving up. We're not giving up. But we can't be disappointed to the point of hunkering down and curling up in fetal mm-hmm. position. We can't do that.
We have to have courage, and it is going to take courage to stand up against some of the things that are going on. I mean, day one of President Biden's term, when he begins office, right on day one, are some of the most prolific attacks against really not only just Christian values, but just long-held human values, thinking that we are so embracing this transgender issue. It's just shocking to me to see how many people, and something that is, you know, the percentages of people that has even felt that way in the past or had that question are so small, and yet this is now like the number one target, the number one issue that we've just got to, like, it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, they you know, the left has to push that agenda harder and harder and harder and harder. They have to support it financially. They've got, it doesn't matter that it's 0.08% of the population. It doesn't matter. They've got to push it because it's not about that.
Mm-hmm.
If we think it's about that, we're living in the Twilight Zone. It's about destroying the moral fiber of America. Mm-hmm. It's about showing Christians, look at what has happened. All your prayers, all your God garbage. What good is it? Mm-hmm. What has it done? It's, they need to get rid of a moral compass. A moral compass is the Bible.
That's right.
It is the Lord Jesus.
Yes.
And they need to be done with that. They need to get it out of the way because they don't want to be measured by that yardstick, which shows the conviction that they really have in their hearts. If they don't want to be measured by that yardstick, then that yardstick is obviously a lot more meaningful to them than they would let on to believe. And they believe that by doing away with the yardstick, somehow it's going to make everything moral and everything right. I think Sodom and Gomorrah probably felt the same way. And so, you know, we don't have to have all the answers. We know there's an agenda of the darkness of this world as much as there's an agenda of ours or of God's. But they have no victory. The victory's already been lost. They don't have any victory in that. But at the same time, he prowls like a lion to pounce on whoever they can. And when you think of tens, maybe of millions of that darkness in this world, you know, they have an agenda, and it is to take the focus off of Jesus, and that's all they can do.
Yeah.
You know, they can't win anything, and we can't fall prey to that, and we can't. We just have to say, all right, we know certain things that aren't. I mean, we know that every little act of a miracle or a spiritual is not always of God. It can be the spirit, the other spiritual realm, mm-hmm. as well. And you know, we've got to just be encouraged about glory and what we are certain of, and we are certain that God's line of thinking is the same as ours, and ours is the same as His. Hopefully, mm-hmm. So we know what He's thinking. We know His nature. We have worked and learned to know His nature. We know this is against His will. This is against His nature, but He may allow it, but it's against His nature.
Right.
And we know that. We should take peace in that. And we know whatever He's got planned is going to be for the good of us.
Even though we don't see it right now, that is true. And that's what the sovereignty of God is, such a source for me, a source of peace and comfort in my heart when initially. And I agree with you. And there were a lot of people who immediately after the election, they were so shocked. I think there was a sense of shock that somehow had to be worked through, that things were going to go. And then as it didn't take long for you to have to come out of that shock, because it was definitely going the other direction, yeah, for them. But there's a couple of verses in the Bible. Psalm 73 is one where Asaph, the psalmist, is looking at everything, and he's not understanding it, how that these that are wicked could be prospering. And then he makes this statement. He says, I didn't discern their end until I spent some time in the sanctuary of God, mm-hmm. and then I understood. So yeah. I think that coming into that presence of the Lord, and that's what was typified there in the sanctuary of God. When we get with God, we realize exactly what you said is right, that God is, He's doing things that we just don't see. Maybe we don't understand them, but it is God who's doing them.
Amen. And it is. You're absolutely right, Mike. As we look at those things and those psalms, the wisdom psalms, we're to go to them often. Mm-hmm. The psalmist in Psalm 119, we're not sure who it was, but the psalmist that wrote Psalm 119, you know, says that I keep your word in my heart. And you know, people say, well, I can't remember the psalms. It's because you're trying to remember them with your brain. You need to remember them with your heart, yeah, and you need to keep them in your heart. Mm-hmm. And I meditate, he says, I meditate on your word, you know, night and day.
I love Jeremiah's words. He says, thy words were found and I ate them.
Yes.
And they became for me, yeah, a joy.
I have a friend of mine, Dr. Woodrow Kroll. He was Back to the Bible. He was the voice of Back to the Bible for years. And he did a whole series on eating, mm-hmm, the word of God. It was great. That's what it reminded me of. It was so amazing. But you know, we as believers have so much to be hopeful for. Mm-hmm. But we are also living in a time today where we can instill that hope in people we never thought we could. And we need to be about that business, you know. And I have an opportunity, like you have an opportunity, Mike. We have an opportunity to sit here in front of a super broad audience. I don't know what the numbers are. I don't know what it looks like. I know you don't either. We just,
no.
But we do know that God's not going to waste our time.
Right.
And somebody is being impacted.
Yes.
I know. I just said it this today. God, I didn't raise up all these stations, 660, whatever it is. I didn't have anything to do with that. God did it. I don't know why it scares me. I don't like to think about why, because I don't know what He's got in store for me or what He wants me to do. So, you know, I think of those things, and it is, all you can do is be in awe. Mm-hmm. Of what He's done. And all we can try to do is be obedient.
That's it.
Just try to be obedient and figure out what it is. Discern that. And we discern that in the quietness of the Psalms, of God's Word. That's where we discern that. We should be discerning that in the presence of God and in God's Word. And so, look, we are making great strides for the kingdom in the work that you're doing, in the work that God has me to do. We are making great strides to the kingdom. I don't know all what they are, what they look like, or, you know, people would apologize to me for I'm speaking and there's only 300 people there. And I'm like, I don't care if there's three. I'm going to say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's three, somebody's going to be impacted because God's not going to waste my time.
That's right.
And that's the attitude we have to have all the time.
I just love the fact that you are on so many radio stations and you are making an impact and people, you can hear it. That's why I love listening to you, those promos that you put on where people are calling in.
Oh, yeah.
And those are helpful to me because those are the voices of the people that we serve.
Right.
And
right.
I think that as long as we keep our eye on two things, Dan. Number one, and obviously first, on the Lord, and realize that we're doing, even at this conference, we're doing what His will is for us to do. And number two, that is affecting His people. Yeah. And His people are being blessed by you. We hope they're being blessed by the Shepherd in all of our programming that we put on. But at the end of the day, we trust God with all of it.
Yeah.
I can't answer for everything that's going on.
Right.
There are people here at this CPAC that are not believers, but
sure,
they're still fighting for causes that are important
to
all Christians.
Yes.
To God.
To
God.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And somebody said to me last night, when are you going to retire? I said, I don't know. You have to ask God. I said, I prayed, I don't know, 5-6 years ago that I was going to serve Him for the rest of my life.
Mm.
So he would have to raise up something for me to retire to that is still serving Him.
Yeah.
And right now, all I got is this stinking radio, whether I like it or not.
And
I love it, but it's all I got. So until he raises up something, you and I just got to keep plugging away. And do, being obedient. It's all it's about.
It's just really great. Our booths are just a few booths apart from where we're both sitting right now, and I'm so grateful for you, and maybe you can drop back by before this thing is all over.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Are you going to be here through the weekend?
I'm going to be here through the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, I will be as well.
Good.
So
we'll try to
we'll
do that again.
Get
I would
to,
like to
see what's going on here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Dan Sillier, my guest here, and we're at the CPAC. Coming up in just a moment, we'll have an interview with Tracy Beans, an investigative reporter. That's all ahead right here on Afternoons with Mike, coming to you from the CPAC, and that is in Orlando. Such a privilege to talk to Tracy Beans. She is founder and editor-in-chief of Uncover RDC and host of her own podcast. Tracy, it's nice to have an investigative journalist with me on the program here. And I know that your work is important because you're dealing with things that really affect what would be called just American values, traditional values. Tell us a little bit about what the highlights of what your expectations here at this CPAC would be.
Thanks for having me today. It's a pleasure to be here with you. CPAC is a place where everyone comes together to try and figure out what the next year is going to look like politically. And, candidates come here to talk to constituents. This is basically the center of the conservative political world for the next 4 days or so. With President Trump coming to speak on Sunday, everyone's really excited about that. And it's interesting because a lot of people thought he might not be here, and then he's here, and Vice President Pence is not, and people, are talking about that. But I think it's exciting to have him here because he brings in the everyday American, right, to this conference.
He does, and he represents what many would believe is still the face, if you will, of the party, of the Republican Party, even though he's out of office. And with what has to be an unprecedented amount of pressure and move against him, pushing back on this man, yet he remains, he's almost like what Ronald Reagan used to be called, the Teflon kid. I mean, it's hard to stick something on them, and yet he is fighting the fight.
Yeah, it's been a really rough 4 months or so, I guess you'd say. I've been covering the election integrity issues since the beginning, since the election, very in-depth level, working on some teams behind the scenes to get information out to folks so that we could tackle this problem at the state level in each state. And the roadblocks and hurdles and just even people very close to the president that were not willing to give him good information on what he was able to do and what he wasn't able to do. it's stunning, actually, how many people just wanted him to just go away, even on his own team.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the face of all that adversity, you have to wonder how one stays strong to keep fighting through that. It's very, very difficult. So God bless him for what he's doing.
And one question I would have for you, you know, people think of investigative journalism and their mind would rush back maybe to when it first began of notoriety with television investigations. And now in this day and age with a culture, with a cancel culture being what it is, it would seem on one hand that there is untold amount of things to investigate. And yet at the other hand, finding outlets that would actually put what you would investigate on is increasingly narrowing, it would seem.
Absolutely. That's why I made my own.
You make your own outlet.
I did. Like I created Uncover DC. We have almost 20 reporters with us now. And, you know, uncoverdc.com, I said actual journalism, you know, where people can come to actually find the truth about things. Where I'm very, very concerned about the state of things right now. And, you know, I had covered the Spygate scandal for the past 4 years in the case of General Flynn and, you know, all of that stuff. And I've gotten to meet a lot of really amazing people. And it's sad that, you know, the truth doesn't have a platform anymore, really, in a broad way.
Yeah.
So if you can't beat them or if you can't join them, you beat them.
From your level, from your viewpoint.
Yeah.
When you look at what has happened with big tech shutting down Twitter accounts, first of all, with the president, that was stunning.
Yes.
And it, in fact, then they turned around after letting him come back on. And then there was the announcement that it was a permanent closure.
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying, regardless of their walk, regardless of their faith, a lot of people are saying, what is happening to America? When you look at this, Tracy, what do you see happening?
It's actually quite scary, and it's hard sometimes because, you know, you've got now Congress people petitioning cable companies to remove conservative media from the air completely. And then the FCC having to come out and say, please don't do this. This is the antithesis of what, you know, we stand for here. There's no holds barred. They've really dropped all of the facade that they have had for so many years, and they're showing themselves for who they truly are on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just, the way I deal with this is there are platforms that will allow me to share the information that I want to share and will allow people to speak. And what they've effectively done is, at least on Twitter and Facebook, they could control the reach of my content, right? They could control how far an article was allowed to travel via tweet or how many people saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can't do that anymore. So it's actually been for me a little bit more freeing than anything else, as crazy as it sounds, because you self-censor when you're always scared about what's going. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you feel that more like you have done? Is this going to be the trend for journalism in the future?
Yeah, you know, there's several journalists now that are independent. They're writing on Substack or Medium or creating their own websites. Matt Taibbi and, you know, Glenn Greenwald come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Two journalists on the left who have been basically shunned by their former outlets and have now started up on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the trend because you need the ability to stand on your own two feet and say what needs to be said without fear of reprisal from an overlord, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, this whole Orwellian type of a sense of Big Brother watching and all of that is just, you know, it's causing pastors of churches to have to give thought even to how and what is preached on Sundays or the ramifications that might come to them if they do stand up and preach what would be considered values from the Bible, but yet traditionally at least, American values that are increasingly falling out of vogue all over the spectrum.
Well, I you know what I think it is? I don't think they are falling out of vogue. I think that there is a minority of people in this country who are made to look like a majority.
That's exactly what I would believe as well.
Yeah, and I think that it's time for people like those pastors to stop caring what those people have to say anymore. And just do what they do, and in the face of whatever comes their way, stand strong, because that's the only thing that's going to stop this, is for people to start being brave.
I think courage is the way to go, and you're talking about who you're really describing right now would be people in California like John MacArthur, who has definitely defied orders and continued to meet, continued to speak, continued to call out in the face of all sorts of lawsuits, which those things are coming still.
Yeah, that's another, you know, tool that, that folks use. I mean, look, you know, you've got Sidney Powell, Mike Lindell, all of them being sued for billions of dollars for speaking about Dominion during the election. You know, it's time for that. There's no other time. Soon it might be too far gone for us to do it at all, because they keep taking and taking and taking, and if we allow that to continue happening, we'll never get it back.
Mm.
So people just need to be brave right now. That's why I'm just, whatever may happen, this is the path that God put me on. So
that's just amazing that he has done that for you. And your work has caught the eye of even President Trump. And that had to be an amazing realization.
You know what was great about that is that he's retweeted me several times when I was on Twitter. But the one thing he retweeted before we all got banned, because it was basically all at the same time, was the thread that I wrote for fundraising for my media company. And he retweeted that, which really meant a lot to me.
Oh, that is such a great thing. And when you look forward, what is the next? Can you even share what the next thing that you're looking into?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing a lot of work still on election integrity, because that's still an ongoing issue. And I'm also working with through COVID. We've had a lot of really groundbreaking stories on COVID and developments with the testing and medication. We've had you know, tons of interviews with doctors. And I have a reporter who worked a lot on the AIDS crisis back in the day, who knew Carrie Mullis, the guy who invented the PCR test. And so we've had a lot of really great reporting on that. And anything else that comes up, we cover. Like, literally anything.
There's a lot going on. And again, in this day and age, it does seem that there is no shortage of topics that are not only interesting. I think that's the big thing. I think that what we're seeing right now is because there's such an attack. It's an overt attack on civil liberties, Christian liberties across the board.
Yeah.
That one, it's almost like you have to find what is really the most pressing cause.
Do you know what's interesting? What I'm finding is a lot of people are gravitating towards the stories that are small town but national import. In other words, in Connecticut, they're fighting the school board there against the mask mandates in their schools and some legislation for forced vaccination there. This small group of parents in Connecticut is fighting this, and we published a story about what they're doing, and it went viral. Like, everybody in the country wants to read about what these little town people in Connecticut are doing. Same thing in Rochester, New York. There was a weatherman up there who was being attacked by the left for saying something completely innocuous on the air. It wasn't even something racially motivated. And we're covering, and then, you know, this other person got the FBI involved, and they're being targeted by the FBI now. This weatherman on a news station in Rochester, in New York, you know, people want to read about that, because I think that people are looking for examples of folks who took control in their local area and did something to affect change, because people are really lost right now as to what they can do to stop this. And so anything that happens at a local level kind of gives folks hope that, like, yes, okay, well, the state of South Carolina is passing, you know, legislation to ban abortion, you know, after a heartbeat. And there's other states that are passing, you know, federalism basically is back. And states are really taking it upon themselves to pass legislation to protect themselves as states from the encroachment of the federal government. So
yes, indeed. In several of my interviews, we've talked about that very thing, about it's really encouraging to see governors rise to the, like what you were talking about a while ago, and taking courage and saying, no, we're not going to do that. Or no, we're not going to shut down. I think our own governor here in Florida is a prime example. In fact, I've had many people tell me that the word is out in just about every other state that Florida is the place to be with freedom and liberty, at least.
Yeah. Florida's it's a breath of fresh air.
We have a lot more going for us even than just that. The sunshine today, it's beautiful down here, a lot prettier than what many people are coming down to this conference
I am from South Carolina, and it has rained every day for the past month. I'm not kidding. I'm serious.
Oh,
this
goodness.
Is beautiful. This is like, and it's been in the 30s there, and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I've heard that we might even hit 90 by Sunday.
Oh,
so
gorgeous.
That would be very nice.
Wonderful.
And so people will leave the CPAC and head to the beach.
Yeah, immediately.
That's great. Tracy, when you look, final question here.
Yeah.
When you look forward now at the mood of America, what do you see happening?
Two different things. There are still some people who are distraught.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's the stages of grief, right? Because despite whether or not you are a huge President Trump fan, the country was basically just stolen from us, in my opinion. So there's the grief and the people who are distraught. And then there's also people who are just raring to go to be active to fix this. And they're getting, that group is getting bigger and bigger. So I'm actually working to spearhead a movement to reorganize the GOP. And so in South Carolina, all of us are going now, and during our reorg, we're going to take EC spots, and we're going to start peppering in the empty holes in the party that they don't want you to know about, that they exist. And we're going to start, you know, making decisions for the Republican Party moving forward as grassroots.
Now, President Trump, in his running for office in the beginning in 2016, he identified the swamp. But his definition of the swamp would not have been just the left Democrats. It would have also been inclusive of people from his own party.
Yes.
And how much of a resistance are you seeing today compared to 2016?
For what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
They don't want us there.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
You're not a welcome partner.
No, not at all. And I keep on, you know, I'm on local radio there all the time imploring the lieutenant governor and others in the state, you know, put your arms around us. And teach us and nurture us and show us, you know, and explain to us. And maybe we can fix things that are broken. And maybe we'll have better ideas. You know, maybe we can make the state a better place to live and make sure that we stay a free, conservative, you know, God-fearing, solid state. But they don't want us in their apple cart.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to knock it over.
Well, Tracy, you're the kind of person that I believe it is going to take in this world in journalism. Thank you for standing up for all that you are doing. And this whole thing, a lot of people are disappointed, even at some of the media outlets that they had come to trust. And it felt like that was the only way to go without naming names.
Yes.
But I think we all know who I'm talking about. And now there are other organizations that seem to be rising up. So American ingenuity, American invention, it seems to be on the rise.
Yeah, it is. And it's exciting. So as sad as it can be sometimes, and like you just want to throw your hands up seeing what some of these folks do, stay strong, stay positive, and we'll come out more beautiful on the other side of this. I'm firmly in the belief that that'll
happen.
I love it.
Tracy Beans, thank you for being with me today on The Shepherd.
Thank you.
Interviewing today Joshua Phillip. Joshua is host of Crossroads, and he is my second investigative reporter, but he's from the Epoch Times. And I tell you what, this is a great newspaper. It's coming into its own, Joshua.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting watching the growth. I mean, you know, in our eyes, we're not doing anything special. We're just kind of doing just regular journalism. But, you know, there's a big market for that these days, apparently.
Now, the name itself, explain a little bit to our viewers or to our listeners who may not understand all of what your implication is for that name.
Well, so Epoch Times or Epoch Times, depending where you're from. So a lot of people ask Epoch or Epic. If you're an American, it's Epic. If you're Canadian or European or Canadian or from the UK, it's Epoch. And so you kind of say both.
Mm-hmm.
But Epoch Times was actually started back in 2000 by Chinese Americans with the purpose of creating a media that could not be censored. And it was originally started to fight back against Chinese disinformation, more for the Chinese communities here in the U.S., which is why we've been blacklisted by the Chinese Communist parties from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, we saw that there's a need for just honest, you know, good old-fashioned journalism everywhere.
And it is very well done. I received this at my home, and it just started showing up. And that was shortly after, I guess, I started hearing it being quoted all over the place. I mean, there are writers, and as I was talking to the person that I interviewed that I mentioned, another investigative journalist named Tracy Beans, what we were talking about there was the fact that new avenues are needed in this day and age, because the old avenues that many have used for a long time, we've all seen what's happened to that.
Well, and what's interesting is this movement is already starting. Really, I mean, the way that independent media are coming up, especially on social media, I mean, we saw incredible, incredible growth, and I saw a lot of other media were seeing the same type of growth. And frankly, I think this terrified kind of the big tech infrastructure, this whole industry around it, that includes the, you know, mainstream media, a lot of them, that includes all the big companies, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name it. And they saw that these up-and-coming companies were becoming the leading voices on a lot of these platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that challenged their whole system of control, and it freaked them out, which is why we have cancel culture right now going after all these outlets.
Now, you mentioned that your newspaper was really blacklisted by a large segments of the world population right from the very get-go. How have you seen what's happened since November 3rd affecting what you do?
Well, in China, actually, Epoch Times, we originally did have Chinese staff in China. I mean, they had to kind of operate, you know, beneath the wires, so to speak. But, well, you know, they had a knock on the door one day soon after they started. Chinese police were there. Every one of them was arrested. Our editor was tortured. He spent 10 years in prison in China. And so, you know, this for us is just a reality. And we've been dealing with Chinese cyber attacks, Chinese, you know, threats against our staff members, all this stuff. Pretty much from the get-go. And so what's happening in the United States right now with censorship and pressure and trying to censor you and stuff like that, for us, this is Tuesday, you know? we're used to this. It's shocking to see this type of push for censorship happening in America. But, you know, frankly, we're well-positioned to face it.
Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of people right now who are needing and wanting to hear the viewpoints that are not from the left. And it is shocking, and, you know, I'm so grateful as a believer, and we're a Christian radio station that functionally are reaching out to people who are of like faith. But there are issues that are going on today that, whether you're a believer or not, if you're just an American, you have a stake at what's going on and what your newspaper talks about. It's so important.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't consider ourselves a religious newspaper. Our slogan, though, is truth and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And just the virtue of tradition does touch on the founding principles of this country, which do have Judeo-Christian values.
Right.
And we do a lot defending religious liberty. We do a lot kind of defending and, you know, promoting these traditional stories that work as the moral foundations of this country. And, I think this is a needed discussion, especially when all of this is under attack right now.
Well, I've heard and read on a lot of the bios of the people who are speaking here, let's say all of the senators, or at least a lot of the senators and representatives, that one buzzword that is now floating in just about every camp and every interview, it's traditional American values. And that's what people are standing for. And to me, it's almost unbelievable that that has to become a descriptor for what you believe in.
Well, you know, let's put it this way. I was looking at a lot of social media posts of people getting their, you know, send in your donation to the Republican Party, and they were writing back, you know, no, you backstab Trump, I will never support you again. The future of the conservative movement is only behind, I think, the Republican Party, really only because Trump is still with the Republican Party. I think they're realizing that it's not going to be the case, that they can just roll things back and pretend Trump never happened and go back to the old way of doing things, you know, the old Bush-Obama era type politics. That is not going to happen with the Republican Party. If they abandon or marginalize the conservative movement, who are the entire body of the Republican Right. Party, they're going to find themselves standing alone. And what it comes down to is this, that, you know, people are conservative first, Republican second, most of them. At least on the right side of things. Mm-hmm. And really, a lot of them are only behind the movement, really behind the party, because it supports the values that they believe in, which is, you know, the founding principles of this country, constitutional rights, faith, freedom, family, all these things. And frankly, when it comes to what's happening with socialism and, you know, its sister system of communism, which, you know, keep in mind, socialism is just the government practice of it. Communism is more like the guiding ideology. It says right in the Communist Manifesto, right? Communism abolishes eternal truth. And what is eternal truth?
Mm-hmm.
And it says also, communism destroys all religion and all morality. And, you know, and this is what we're up against. This is why they persecute religions in every single communist system. This is why religious believers are the number one target, because they're the ones who hold faith and values that go beyond these systems of power.
They are the greatest threat against this very effort to take the progressive left movement, and people who are standing up against it still to this day, again, are not defeated easily. They never have been through history. So I agree with you. If they think that it's going to be an easy fight, they're thinking wrongly. But it is a fight, isn't it?
It is. Well, and let's look back at, you know, what we've seen in history. Soviet Union, you know, whether it's Romania, any country that has had communist totalitarian systems, China right now, religious believers are the number one target,
mm-hmm.
typically. And oftentimes the ones that have collapsed, these regimes that have collapsed, typically are overthrown peacefully by the religious believers. And here's the reason. If people believe in a higher morality, and aside from the broader goals of communism or destroying, but if people believe in a higher morality, a morality higher than government, they have a basis of morality through which to judge government action. And without that, whatever the government does becomes the basis of morality. If government says that killing your landlord is the right thing to do today, like Mao Zedong said when he took power, then that's the right thing to do. Hmm. If they say that, you know, persecuting your teacher or killing monks and so on is the right thing to do, as they did in China during the Cultural Revolution, that's the right thing to do. But if that's where political correctness comes from, is 1967 Mao Zedong. If people believe, though, in a power higher than government, then they look at that government action and say, that is not right, I do not support it, I'm not going to go along with it. And that is a threat to their power.
It is a big threat, and it's one that I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for courage and the people that are standing up and saying, we're not going to do this. Hey, Joshua, thank you for stopping by and talking to me today. And we wish you the best, not only at CPAC, but beyond. And thank you for the work that you're doing.
Hey, real pleasure. Thanks for having
me. Thank you. On the line with me right now, and he's actually going to be coming to the CPAC, is Representative Anthony Sabatini. And Anthony, it's great to have you on. I know you have Central Florida in your heart, and you have always represented so many issues with such excellence, and we thank you. And plus, you're a good friend to a friend of mine, and that's John Stimberger. So I'm really grateful to get to talk with you, sir.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's an honor to be on your show. And yeah, John is one of my all-time favorite people. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
You know, when you look at this year's CPAC, and I've already talked to some people out here, they're excited to be in Florida. And Florida is being looked at as a model, really, about what can happen in a time of COVID. What are your thoughts as you approach this event that's being held at the Hyatt Regency in Florida, in Orlando, for the first time ever out of the D.C. area? What are your thoughts? What are your expectations?
It's very exciting, but it's also very fitting. Florida is the future. We are the freest state. We are the best state. We are the happiest state. We're the state that got the crisis of the last year the most right, and the energy is at our back, you know, with us, and the wind is at our backs. And I think people are moving to Florida. Events are coming to Florida. And it just feels right. It's fitting. I'm proud and honored to represent in the Florida House of Representatives, the western part of Central Florida, Lake County. And, you know, it's just nice to have CPAC here. I hope it stays here permanently. I'm tired of driving all the way, flying all the way up to D.C.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot of people, especially with the weather being what it is this week. There may be more than one reason to move it to Florida, although I think your reasons that you've said are accurate. And they're being talked about around the country right now. And I'm so grateful that we have a leader in the governor's house that's working hard to hold that line, as I know all of the representatives like yourself are as well. And just want to say thank you for doing that and giving us the opportunity as business owners, as small businesses throughout Central Florida. They're all grateful that they don't have the same kind of restrictions that California or other states would like that would have.
Absolutely. God bless Florida.
What are your hopes from some of the speakers that are going to be here, including former President Trump, who will be here on Sunday? What are your thoughts about that?
I think they're going to be good. I'm excited about the lineup that they've chosen. I think the themes that they're going to choose are ones having to do with freedom and just trying to get America back on track. I mean, Joe Biden's doing everything he can to destroy this country, starting at the absolute core of our being, right? The idea of gender, family, religious liberty. I mean, it's an all-out war. It's a complete war. And we've never seen anything like it. This is so much worse than anything. I don't remember Obama ever really trying to change the gender of a child through genital mutilation and thinking that somehow that was okay or a solid after goal. It's getting worse. What we're seeing on the left, that we need to fight harder than ever. So I'm excited to see what solutions these speakers have lined up for us.
I can only imagine in your position the level of pressure that you have put on you on a day-to-day basis. But what would you say is the most obvious thing, besides these executive orders that's come from the new president, what else is happening that you would say is almost like a daily face in the wind for you?
I think the thing that dwells upon me in my mind the most is having to deal with a lot of moderates in the Republican caucus. I try to do everything I can to speak up and inspire conservatives in the caucus and try to get people to think and act as conservatives. And we have a lot of Mitt Romney Republicans and moderates in the caucus that are holding our Republican Party back from being the party of the future. There's just too many timid souls that need to leave the party. Or at least to leave elected office and let some of the courageous conservatives take over. That's the thing I think the most about.
Well, you know, President Trump, when he was running for office in 2016, talked about some of that very thing with referring to those that would be in the Republican Party and including them in the swamp. Do you see that happening in a greater way? Or these that are still in Washington, would you think that has been changed at all, negative or positive, under President Biden?
Well, I think the stakes are higher, but I would say I think it's actually gotten worse, because what was easily able to happen was a lot of people a lot of the swamp and the moderates hid behind the banner and sort of pretended to be America First, pro-Trump people, but at the end of the day, we're just as corrupt as ever. And we've seen that with Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney's the conference chair in D.C., and she's an absolute embarrassment to our country and our party, and she should be actually abolished from office, yet she's the number two or number three most powerful Republican in the caucus. It's shameful. So we have more work cut out for us than ever, but the people themselves are more enthused and more plugged in and more engaged and, ready to go. So I think it's time to really drain the swamp this time and reassert the conservative presence in the party.
We saw a movement arise several years ago that became known as the Tea Party, and it was just a grassroots level involvement. People who were never before involved in the political scene were getting involved. Do you see a similar thing happening right now?
Absolutely. We're seeing basically like a Tea Party 2.0, and not as much focus on the taxes and the spending, which is sort of my focus, but more on the existential threat to the country itself and borders and family and the rule of law. Fundamental questions that were under attack from the Obama administration, but not to the degree we're seeing now. And so that's the similarity. But yeah, it's almost like a rebirth of that rebelliousness within the party, which is a good thing.
It is a good thing, and it is something that we're going to have a lot of courage for, because there's so many that would be on the other side that have a strong voice. The American media right now is something that is quite interesting to behold. If I were still a student in communications in college, this would be something to study, because there seems to be such a one-sidedness to the American media, and that's got to be part of what you have to battle every day in getting the message out to your people.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not the average state rep. I do everything I can to fight as hard as I can on every issue that's of importance to conservatives, aka my constituents. The only issue I really have is time management. So
that's right. Well, listen, when you're here, stop by our booth. We'd love to have you back on. And I'm so grateful that you're coming to CPAC. Thank you for representing us as you do, sir.
Thank you, Mike. See you in a little bit. Take care.
Bye-bye. That is Anthony Sabatini. He is a member of the Florida House of Representatives, and happy to have him on here on the program, Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd.